and another one comes alive. Both literally and metaphorically true. That's Lucky Dubé with Monster. Lucky Dubé was from South Africa and was one of the continent's most prominent reggae artists. He had a career that spanned some 25 years. He was killed in a carjacking in a suburb just outside of Johannesburg in 2007. He was the father of seven children. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It's Thursday, April the 18th, and the vote was continue with the discussion for today. That's what you told me, and that's what I'm doing. Thank you very much. I was very pleasantly surprised that people were enjoying this exercise that we're doing on deciphering media coverage of the bomb blasts at the Boston Marathon. But first, let's do a couple of updates. The small town of West Texas was shattered last night by a deadly explosion and fire that tore through a fertilizer plant in its downtown area, injuring more than 100 people, leveling dozens of homes, and spewing highly toxic fumes that forced evacuations of about half of its community of 2,700. Today, as the town comes to grips with the devastation caused by the blast, local authorities continue the gruesome task of confirming the number of fatalities. At this point, it is said to be between 5 and 15. They are still searching. The number of people taken to area hospitals and searching for those who are still missing. Meanwhile, an investigation has been launched to determine whether the explosion heard some 45 miles away and measured 2.1, much like an earthquake on the Richter scale, was accidental. West Texas is about 20 miles north of Waco. And if that strikes you as a familiar term, you do know that the Branch Davidians, who had built and were occupying a camp in Waco, Texas, came into a brutal end at the hands of federal authorities. Some 82 members of the sect and four federal agents died at Waco, Texas. The 20th anniversary of that raid is tomorrow. President Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama were among a list of dignitaries attending an interfaith service at the Catholic Cathedral of the Holy Cross in Boston today, honoring both the victims of the marathon bombings and the heroic acts of first responders and others who tended to and comforted the wounded. The president made a rousing speech at the service, which ended about half an hour ago. But the president was handed a stinging defeat yesterday when five members of his own party sided with Republicans to vote down what was touted as a bipartisan compromise on expanding background checks for gun buyers, a measure designed to make it harder for criminals to get their hands on guns. Reacting to the vote, President Obama said it was a pretty shameful day in Washington. Well, we touched on many things dealing with media coverage of this bombing. And, of course, it's interrelated with a number of things that seem to be unfolding. But we'll focus on the bombings for the time being. And you took us quite a ways on this. This was great. But today what I want to talk about is the news values. What are news values? News values basically guide the editorial thrust or the content of a story, the focus of a story. It gives the story direction. And there are quite a few things that come into play when somebody evaluates a story, even before writing it. What are the news values of a story, or what is the news value? Sometimes stories just have one thing to report or one central theme. But a story like this, the bombings in Boston, has so many component parts. So the news values are many. So Some of them we talked about, but I want to just tell you some of the others that exist. This is a local story in the sense that it happens in Boston, so it will have primary application to people in Boston. But of course, we know it's also a national story, and in fact, an international story. It's a national story by virtue of the fact that it concerns the marathon, and people from all over the country attend the marathon. Plus, it is a well-known national event. It is also an international event, because people from all over the world compete. And the evidence of that, of course, was that the winners of the marathon, both the male runner and the female runner, the top three spots were all taken by Ethiopians and Kenyans. The top male spot was an Ethiopian. The top female spot was a Kenyan. So we have a story that is at once a huge implication in terms of world focus. You also have the number of people affected, the sheer number of people affected. We had almost 27,000 runners in the marathon itself. But the number of people affected, you multiply the local population by the national population, you add that to the international population, and you see a whole world community would have an interest in the story. So news writers write with this information in mind. The value is also of destruction and tragedy and terror. That is a news value because, in effect, the very reason that the story is a story is that it centers around these bombs going off and causing so much pain and disaster. So a news value would be disaster and the consequences of that. You know, all these people having wounds, people dead, you know, all these people involved as a result of this one act, a very violent act. So that is a news value. There's a news value in the story from the point of mystery. How did this happen? Who did this? When are they going to catch these people? What would it take? How could they do such a thing? These are the kinds of unanswered questions. So the one of the ways in which you will get a certain kind of story, literally asking these questions, that's a theme. So it will pop up in all these different ways. How will they be detected? What will be the trail to them? Who is going to find that trail? And how would they be delivered to justice? We have news value because it involves celebrity. And in this case, the celebrity comes in the oddest ways. The celebrity comes from the victims. These, you know, the young boy, innocence, this, the symbolism and celebrity, these are people now who are, for lack of a better term, they're like the martyrs of this awful disaster. The young student from China, the graduate student, and the young woman with also try to get her life together, these three people. And you make a sense of people who are completely unrelated to each other, operating in their own spheres, doing their own thing, but taken away so abruptly and so violently by forces unknown. So you'll get these kinds of stories. You'll get the stories of the heroes, the people who came to their aid, the doctors who saved lives, the ordinary person who summoned up superpower and just selflessly flung her or himself into the moment to render aid and so forth. You'll get all of that. But then you'll get some other things too. Now, I want to introduce these ideas because you will see these stories and you'll wonder, why are they writing these things? There's a reason. We talked about symbolism. Boston, the location of the story, is a very symbolic place for this thing to happen. Of course, you know about Boston being associated with the great Boston Tea Party. Boston being the locus, if you will, of the start of the War of Independence, begun by the Sons of Liberty, people fighting the British government over taxes for tea that came into the British colonies. Boston being the seat of academic power, academic accomplishment for the entire United States, some of the most incredible institutions of higher learning. Boston being the seat, I mentioned yesterday, of MIT, you know, and here in contrast, we have low technology, literally almost making a statement, ha ha, with all of your sophistication, look what we could do. With a pressure cooker and a tin can and some nails. So Boston is very, very symbolic. Very symbolic from that perspective. Patriots' Day was the day that this event occurred. And although Patriots' Day correctly is to be celebrated on the 19th, and that is a significant day. To a certain sector of America. In Boston and in Maine, in Massachusetts, I should say it in Maine, Patriots' Day is a day that they recall the framing of a new national identity of former British subjects rejecting and opposing the rule of their former king, and taking on the responsibility of, even in its incipient way, forging a nation. I mentioned April 19th because that's the date of the Waco assault, and Timothy McVeigh was very careful to point that out, that he chose that day. And so we can't miss the symbolism of that. There's symbolism, too, in the way that we see the iconic images. We see there was a picture of one of the responders, for lack of a better term. He was just an ordinary guy there to witness the marathon, holding a blood-stained flag. It's a very iconic picture. And his shirt and his pants and all the front of it was just drenched in blood. And he was said to be a person who just jumped into the moment and rendered aid to as many people as he possibly could. He happened also to be the father of a soldier killed in Afghanistan. So all of these things come together and they make for a wonderful soup for the media. But the media, in the immediate aftermath of an event like this, literally goes into a natural mode. It goes into automatic mode. And the automatic mode is you have the media serving as the kind of a propaganda machine to keep people together, to help summon up nationalistic fervor, to bring about a sense of we are one. Whatever force this is, we are better and bigger than it. And look at all the ways in which we suddenly they will start touting the American identity as being a very fantastic thing. And look how it expresses itself in the middle of all this misery, in the middle of all this danger. They shape our thinking this way because it is, how could I say, it is an indirect admission of fear. So they overcompensate for it in the with the expectation that people might be freaking out also. So they write these stories as a kind of comfort to give people, not that that is a perfectly a good journalistic goal. The journalistic goal should be just report on the what happened. But an interesting thing happens, and this is typical of disasters of a national or international nature. The journalists themselves are locked out of the very place they want to be, which is in the heart of the information that is so vital that they want to know. For example, right now, every media agency wants to know who these guys are and how could they find them first and, quote, break the story. So they show their interest, their shared interests as media organizations with the shared interests of the intelligence community, which is to pacify, keep people calm, keep them focused, keep them hopeful, and keep them reaching all the time, reaching for the best of the American identity. Don't stoke any fires. Don't have people asking questions. Don't have them doubting the capacity of the country to solve the problem. So you'll find stories repeatedly like this in one way or the other. The media people, this is an area in which they are not, they have no expertise. So they have to depend on people on the inside to give them the information. This is how they demonstrate goodwill. So that maybe they get a little something here, they get a little something there. But they also, don't forget, the media being an extension of the elite society, they also, as journalists, are expressing the wider view, the broader view, that they are uneasy and they are fearful. You have a typical cycle in the immediate aftermath again. You have the emphasis on humanity in the face of horror. This capacity, build people's psychological capacity to deal with adversity, to deal with immeasurable sorrow, even anger. Stress ingenuity, the belief in God. Now, this is very important, which is what President Obama was doing today. It is a very important thing in the face of disaster. Always reach for a higher power. And that's why he went today. That's part of the cycle. You call upon God because, of course, America has dibs on God. We have a closer connection to God than anybody else on the planet. And you, between God and the flag, you have a matrix to contain anxiety, national anxiety, to contain fear. The people doing this stuff are dogs, but we are human beings with an immense capacity to love one another. We'll talk about that speech tomorrow. You will notice that photographs and images will be played over and over again. This is psychological conditioning. It gets it imprints this in your mind. So even if you forget the story, you remember the image. As I told you, I'm sure that image of that man holding the bloodstained flag, that's an iconic image. And in that image would come to bear all of the associated fears and desires and even hidden agendas when that image is presented to you. They will not, as a media, as a collective, they will not be highlighting tragic events over and over and over again. They'll try to limit that. So they will refrain from presenting tragic events, because this one should be the top one. Even if something else is more more brievous, but this is the top one. Everybody has selected it. This is a top one for the time being. Whatever happens will be secondary to this. This is a top story. They will not do stories that will embarrass authority. They're just not going to ask questions, well, hey, what happened to this safety precaution method that you're supposed to have? What happened to vigilance? What happened to crowd control? What happened to the... They're not going to ask any questions that are likely to embarrass authority or to disturb the strategic interests of the country. And I'm referring now to the Chinese student. Just as America is about to again approach China, this story has to be as compassionate as possible in order to indicate to the Chinese people, to the Chinese government and the Chinese community, a compassion and a human commonality with the people of China. You see how a small story gets to be this complicated? Oh, yes. And we had, of course, a president, as I said, making this trip to Boston today. And it is described as an interfaith service, but held where? At the seat, at a church reflecting the power structure in Boston. It wasn't held at the local Baptist church or the local synagogue. It wasn't held at the local Episcopalian church. It was held at the Catholic Cathedral of the Holy Cross. Why? Because that is the institution, and everybody understands it. Nobody even questions it. Everybody understands why it's there, as opposed to any place else. It wasn't held in a stadium. It was held at the seat of religious power in that town. And that is the Catholic Church. Why? Because Boston has a very large Catholic community. And Boston's political structure is governed by Catholics. Very simple. So when you see these stories coming at you, and they come at you with alarming regularity, this is the first cycle in the immediate aftermath. These are the things that typically happen. The reporters are not really able to take us where we need to go. So they agree to perform the function of, if you could imagine that the government had a department of propaganda, this the Department of Propaganda would be doing exactly what the media is doing right now. In another week or so, it will change. The tone will change, and they will become more and more insistent at a whole different level, because they will now return to journalism. Why? Because, quiet as it's kept, the media are themselves competing like crazy against each other, and they have a vested interest to show their acumen, their journalistic acumen, because it now is about money for the entities they work for. Money and prestige. For television, they are in the process, although it doesn't look like it, but all these reporters who are, quote, anchoring are also collecting kudos and collecting notches on their resumes. I covered so-and-so. A story really isn't a story until Anderson Cooper shows up. And then the story now begins to be personalized to the person reporting it. And the tone will shift. We haven't gotten there yet. They're still behaving nicely, and they're still behaving as an extension of the propaganda machine. Keep it nice, keep it upbeat, you know, nationalistic fervor, flag, God, country, heroism, the capacity of the country to solve its problems, even when it looks as bleak as this, our capacity to deal with difficulty and surmount them, our essential humanity, which is superior to everybody else's. And these are the, in other words, little by little, if you had a list, you'd be checking off all the things that the country basically exports to the world as its seminal qualities. These are the things that make America, America. And as a president, particularly, here's a man who is in deep trouble politically. We'll deal with that tomorrow. But this event has brought even his enemies around and a critical press around to behave themselves, because this is not the time to be critical. This is the time to surround even the president with whom they regularly disagree. So I'm going to leave it right here for openers so you can get some time to talk and exchange your ideas. There's much more, of course, that needs to be said, but that's a good start. I wanted to just get you oriented to recognizing what is happening when stories are coming at you at 80 miles an hour and you don't, you think you're just ingesting stories, the information. It's information with a purpose. We are all being conditioned, and we're all going through this step, which is the way they do these things, in order to manage disaster at a national level. The press agrees to play the role of propaganda machine. The press agrees to shore up, to be the PR agency for the administration. And for this little point in time, it will soon go away, but for this little point in time, the press itself is rising, as it sees it, to a dignified level and, doing the right thing, not being disrespectful of the dead and all of this kind of stuff, fulfilling their role and their mission as propaganda machine. We'll take this fast break and come back almost immediately before you blink your eyes. We'll be back right after this break. You will call at 888-874-4888 with your comments and questions right after this. You're listening to PRN.FM. This is Lead Stories, and I'm Nutrice Lead, and we have Sarah. Hello, Sarah from Dallas. You're first up.
Oh, greetings to you, Nutrice.
Thank you. You too.
Well, I had to go back and re-listen from the week because I didn't get a chance with work to hear the whole dialogue, and it was very informative.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Nutrice. And I have not, I have not turned on the television to look at any of the news coverage for this bombing. I've been able to gather my information from on the internet and watching news clips. And it has just formed the conclusion, as you and several of your callers have said over the past 2 days, that this is all a programming effect on black people. Let me take out the word black, on the American public as a whole. Because as you have noticed, and the networks have all noticed, that they are not making any money. They are alternative news sources, and these networks are not making any money. So when something like this comes up, they are chafing at the bit. They're trying to wring out as much out of it as possible to make themselves relevant, even if they have to go with half-cocked ideas and information to put out there, to get you tuned into them and to keep coming back and to feed and feed on this foolishness, this so-called reality show that they're playing out for the public. And I'm glad that you mentioned the situation with tying it all in, as the callers mentioned, with what the significance of the Patriot Day, which is also tax day for the IRS. And we've all known throughout the year they have had incidents where lots of people who have had issues with the government and taxation, they have done things as a protest, as we had this person here in Texas that flew his plane into the IRS building right outside of Austin a couple years ago on tax day. So there are instances where people are doing these things. The tie-in also with MIT and what they are doing for the Defense Department also needs to be in consideration.
No, sure, but the point your
ma'am.
Points are well taken. We've also raised those points. But where we are is in just taking a look at how these things are expressing themselves in the course of what would normally be considered media coverage.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So thank you so much. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us today. 888-874-4888. And that's a very important point. The idea that, you know, you have to sense when the cycle is about to end. And you will see it. It will end. It will end very shortly because, as Sarah was mentioning, and I had intended to get to that tomorrow, there is fierce competition, not only for coveted prizes and so forth, but these coveted prizes translate into money when news organizations come up to advertisers and say, hey, these are our new rates. And the advertisers say, based on what? And as we'll find out tomorrow, because technology has made just about every person, literally, it has so democratized information, it has made every person literally a potential reporter. The traditional ways of news dissemination have dramatically changed, and the decision of what is news is less and less in the hands of corporate media and more in the hands of ordinary people who are taking advantage of new technologies. It is no accident that after the marathon, they had to turn to the public and say, look, if you have any images, could you send them to us? And the images are not coming. The images of the suspected bombers, is not coming from media. So there's a shift occurring. It's fantastic to really use this particular period that we're in to closely study a number of things that are going on. There's a free fall going on in major media. It's literally dying on its feet, traditional media dying on its feet. So a lot of this insistence on prolonged coverage is to affirm their own fear of becoming irrelevant. They are insisting on a presence, therefore they insist on your attention. You see? So the longer they keep reporting, the more they can claim that they are the go-to source for information. But as we will see from statistics, more and more people are turning to alternatives for their information. That's a whole other discussion, but that's a great discussion just the same. 888-874-4888. Now, tomorrow, we will take on the president's speech because it is stunning how literal it gets in terms of what we've been talking about here the last couple of days. But it is still important to understand it not as a speech, but as a necessary function of a head of state in the predicament that the country as a whole finds itself in. So these are the things that, these are the protocols that are smart to follow, whether they mean it or they don't mean it, whether, these are irrelevant. What is important is that these are the necessary steps and the predictable steps that the media will follow. And as you consume information, you have to consume information very, very selectively and very carefully. You have to decide what, in effect, information is. So, what have you to say? You voted. I'm here. We're doing the program. Let me hear what you're thinking at 888-874-4888. I want to thank you, while we wait for the calls to come in, for your very enthusiastic response at my email, which is leadstories@gmail.com, and on the Facebook page, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. It is because of your very, very brisk and enthusiastic feedback that we are continuing the discussion today. Another interesting parallel here really concerns both the governor of Massachusetts and the president of the United States. These are first-time people in their respective offices of African descent. And Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, and Barack Obama also have Harvard in common. So they both went to Harvard. So here we have this one incident putting these two men in really interesting places, one as the person holding the reins of the state and the other the reins of the country. How both of them raised by single mothers. These are very interesting things. And what are the similarities and what are the differences in the way they're approaching this? And here is a fantastic concatenation, as it were, of events that produces these curious crossing of the lines, intersection of lives. The media issue is vitally important because we will see not too long from now, we will see how the media will begin to behave. This particular event is going to embolden it, and it will predictably turn against Barack Obama in a big way. They'll just be playing nice right now. But all of that is going to disappear very shortly. And he will be held, believe it or not, he will be held responsible. The same people who are talking about the president and, you know, this is about our national agenda and we should, you know, shore up the president and his decisions. Very shortly, that's going to change. You will notice that the media organizations are not themselves playing nice. They're not inviting other media people in on their conversations. You're not seeing anybody from the Boston Globe or the Boston Herald frequently on CNN and Fox News or wherever else people get their information from these days. You're not seeing that kind of thing. There's no cross-pollination going on around there. They are shaping up journalistically to submit these things for prizes. This is how they behave. This is how they operate. And should they move on to something else, they will have on their resume, I covered, you know, the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. They're not investigating anything. They're just basically being traffic cop, they're relating the news. They're literally relating the news. They're not investigating it. Nobody is really digging too deep into anything at all. They're sharing the same from the same pot. They're eating the same facts that are spewed out. They're all telling the same story. But they're behaving and observing a particular code of conduct. And that is warranted, they believe, in a scenario like this, because they believe that people will turn on them for being tacky and tasteless and insensitive in the middle of a national tragedy. They don't want to do that because their circulation is going down for the newspapers. Their viewership is also going down. You would be surprised tomorrow when I tell you what's the leading news channel. You would be surprised. And you would see how the new technology has created an entirely new audience that is not paying the mainstream media very much mind at all. Some of them don't even, can't tell you the last time they read the New York Times or the Boston Globe or the Wall Street Journal. They are accessing information in entirely different ways. They are informed in entirely different ways because their informational needs are entirely different. And these organizations are for the old fuddy-duddies like me, my age. We still actually read a paper. They're people who have never done that. For years, they haven't read a paper. They read, they access their information online. They get their information on the go. They get their information from multiple sources. They get their information from alternative media, not mainstream media. They are naturally distrustful of mainstream media. And I don't want to beat up mainstream media because I've never myself ever worked in mainstream media. That's my choice. Because I know what it's like, and I didn't like it from the very beginning, and I still don't like it now. But there's a certain a code. They all follow that. They don't have to sit down and have a meeting. They don't have to send memos around to each other. They instinctively behave this way because it is in their interests to behave this way. They believe they gain a heck of a lot more than they lose. So, what can you expect? Well, we should hold out for the famous photo of the would-be or the suspected bombers. You do know, I will be getting to that. There's a reason we haven't seen the pictures just yet. I'm sure you might have an idea of that too. You might have an idea why we haven't seen the pictures. We did have CNN yesterday kind of jumping the gun, saying that there was an arrest made when in fact there wasn't. And they had to backpedal off of that pretty quickly, as they did. They did a decent job of trying to explain how it was that they misreported that. But you will find the experts. It's about my expert is more expert than your expert. That's going to go on for a couple of days more. And in a short span of time, and you will note precisely when it is, when there's a particular development, this is when the tables will turn. And all of the niceties are going to be dispensed with. And it's now a matter of cutthroat journalism. Well, what they call journalism. Who can get to the facts fastest? And who can approach advertisers and anoint themselves as the leader of the pack in news reporting? This is going to be very important for them. I've been looking at the ratings, and they're not really very pleasant to look at. But again, you'd be surprised at who is doing the best. And if you're doing the best, if you're at the top of the heap, you can command basically your whatever price you want for your ads. Well, we're coming to the end of our program. And I'm hoping, of course, that you will continue the conversation at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com, or on the Facebook page, Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. It's really incredible the kinds of feedback that I get. And, you know, it's stunning. I love it. I love reading where your minds are going and the thinking that you're investing in the subject matter. And I do understand that many of you are listening at your jobs and you don't have the ability to make calls necessarily. But I know I see messages already coming in. You would want to stay tuned because coming up next is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory. I want to thank you for the pleasure and privilege of your company today. I want to again remind you that this is not passive listening, not on Lead Stories. Everybody has a job, and the job here is to help us really increase significantly our reach as PRN and certainly the reach of this program among those in your spheres of influence. So do the job. Make sure that people in your circles are listening to the same program so you can continue the conversation among yourselves. We'll see each other tomorrow, God willing, and the creek don't rise. Bye-bye.